Hello and welcome to the podcast portion of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, previews, reviews, and interviews with baseball authors, artists, filmmakers, musicians, anyone who has anything to do with baseball and pop culture. Because that's our slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. Howard Mengel has to be one of the busiest sports journalists these days. He was recently hired as editorial director for Excel Sports, a website that deals exclusively in women's sports. He also writes for Political New York, USA Today Sports, Vice Sports, and many other outlets. One wonders where he finds the time to sleep, let alone write four books. The Cardinals' Way, How One Team Embraced Tradition and Moneyball at the Same Time, is his latest. It follows such classics as the Baseball Talmud, the definitive position-by-position ranking of baseball's chosen players, Taking the Field, a fan's quest to run the team he loves, and Wilpon's Folly, the story of a man, his fortune, and the New York Mets. I finally had the chance to catch up with Mengel to talk about his many projects in practically the only way possible, during his hour and 40-minute commute from his home in the Hudson Valley to his office at Excel in Manhattan.
Howard Mengel, welcome back to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Thanks for having me.
Now, two of your three previous books have been about the Mets. What was it about the Cardinals that piqued your interest?
So, the Cardinals were doing something that nobody else in baseball was doing. And so the combination of success and longevity and intellectual lineage of that success, which is to say, doing it in a specific, similar way to that which had been done with the history of the franchise, really intrigued me. I wanted to get a sense of essentially how and why that was going on. I went out to do a long-form story on them back in August of 2013, and I came away with some really interesting stuff, but I felt like with the what. And came back home and remember saying to my wife, you know, I think this is going to require a book when it comes down to the how and the why. And fortunately, they followed and were really cooperative in helping to make that happen.
So you say this is originally a long-form story. For whom was that story published?
Oh, for Sports on Earth back in August 2013.
So that laid the groundwork for your being able to go back and have access to all these people, because you had some very deep access to this.
What was remarkable about it was, number one, they were so open for the original story. And so that was fascinating as it was, to be able to talk to the owner, Bill DeWitt, and John Mozeliak, the general manager, and Dan Kantrovich, who was the scouting director at that time, and getting that opportunity to talk to everyone. But there was also, and there was some reluctance, only in the sense that they did not want to be trumpeting their own accomplishments, but I was able to convince them that, you know, look, this was a moment in time in baseball history. And Bill DeWitt, to his credit, you know, born within the game, understands the game, and understood there was merit to that idea, and really opened up his entire organization to talk about not just the good, but the bad as well.
Now, that seems pretty forward-thinking, because you would imagine, I mean, how common is that among professional sports that you find organizations open like that? Because I'm thinking of just one specific line is that whenever there's an injury to one of the players on the Mets, they're totally, you know, secretive about what's going on and whether this is happening or that's happening. So I'm wondering if it's even a Midwestern sensibility as opposed to a coast secretiveness.
I mean, it's a great question. My experience with those organizations that are not on the coasts is not dramatically different in terms of openness and access and things of that sort, and it's really a battle across the board. So it's a shame that there are a lot of baseball teams that are trying to emulate the Cardinals in other ways. I wish they would, as far as media access went as well, because the Cardinals are, you know, really evident of the fact that you do not need to shut the press out in order to be able to have sustained excellence.
Now, two of your three previous books, again, have been about the Mets, Wilpon's Folly and Taking the Field, Defend's Quest to Run the Team He Loves. I'm assuming the Mets were not overly cooperative with you for that one, those two.
No, it was a different sort of experience, to be sure.
Is that all you want to say about it?
I think that's probably the easiest way to summarize it, to be frank. But again, I will just say, you know, the Cardinals stand out even among teams who did not have financial secrets they hope to keep best buried. Let's put it that way.
Now, I'm wondering also, the fact your stature over the past several years has grown dramatically. I mean, you've always been.
I don't think that's fair. I'm still about 6'3".
But, your professional stature, not your physical stature. I'm wondering if now that you've made more of a name for yourself, if that helps grant you more access. And a couple of years ago, you didn't have that for the Mets. And now you have that, and it's opening more doors for you, shall we say.
You know, I wonder if that's true. That's always a battle to fight. And even as you know, I write for like 80 different publications.
Right. Uh-huh.
And there are always the... I shouldn't say always. You occasionally get that question, hey, who is that? Who are you writing it for? And, you know, whether that makes a difference is hard to say. I hope that my track record of writing about people has allowed, you know, people across the industry to understand. I write in depth and I write fairly. And so that's certainly something that I make every attempt to do. Not in an effort to grow my own stature, but simply because it is my belief that I have a really significant responsibility to get it right, that things that are in print are forever. You can find them on the web forever. If they're in a book, you can find them in a book forever. And so I take that really seriously.
Now, let's talk about all those other jobs for just a second. You're on your way. You're in the car now driving to one of those jobs, a new job with Excel, which is a publication and a website for women's sports. Tell us about some of the other jobs you've had over the past 5 or 10 years.
Sure. Well, I mean, just even the start with Excel is something I'm extremely excited about, getting the opportunity to cover women's sports in a comprehensive, complete way. And so I'm editorial director there, and happily jumped at the opportunity to be able to shape the way we get to cover the world of women's sports. Had the opportunity to spend the day with Breanna Stewart on the day she was drafted by the Seattle Storm, the WNBA draft, last week. And that's a story that's up that I'm really proud of. And in general, feel like I'm able to sort of shift that paradigm, and that's very meaningful to me. So that's, you know, that's a main... My main gig these days, but of course I write for USA Today, for Sports Weekly, for Vice Sports, for Politico New York, and for other publications as things come up. But yeah, my heart is very much with Excel and the work that we're doing over there.
Now let's talk about Politico for a second, because that's a big departure from your regular sports gigs.
I mean, it is and it's not. Politico New York, of course, which was formerly Capital New York, is an opportunity to write about sports business. For Josh Benson, who helped create Politico New York, and prior to that had been at the New York Observer, someone I've written for a long time, and I hope, as I recently said to him, to be filing for him on my deathbed, as a matter of fact. So hopefully many years in the future. But the chance to sort of write big picture about the world of sports is in keeping with what I write about for everyone else, but, you know, sort of a unique window into that, I think.
Going back to Excel, in this day of political correctness, what is it like being a man writing about women's sports?
I've found that I've been incredibly supported. And there's, look, you know, you take gender of the person writing out of it, and there's a clear issue. And the issue is that women are not covered in sports the way men are, anywhere close to it. There's a, you know, a downward cycle that comes as a result when women's sports are treated by the people running the leagues, when they're treated by the people who own the television rights, and they're treated by the media as well as somewhat less, as somehow less and less important The net result is that audience is smaller as a result, which is then used to justify treating them as if they're something less. And so the only way to sort of end that cycle is by covering them the way they ought to be covered, which is to say equal to the way men's sports are covered. There's nothing inherent in a men's college basketball game that is more important than a women's college basketball game. And yet, you are significantly more able to read about, say, the Eastern Washington men's basketball team and find scores and find features than you are even about someone like Oregon State, who went to the Women's Final Four this year and was overflowing with amazing stories. And so people have been very supportive, number one. And number two, what you're really talking about is sort of two issues, one being the way women's sports are covered, and the other being the fact that there are disproportionately more men than women in the field of sports media, and both are issues, and both have some Venn diagrams, some overlapping as far as the how and the why, but both are, frankly, things that need to be addressed.
One of the things I discovered, as you pointed out, is when I was doing research for my other blog on Jews in sports, and I was covering the NCAAs, and there were a handful of men and women playing in the tournament. And you go to any of the men's school sites, and there'll be a page for them with their pictures and their bio and their statistics. And you go to the women's site, and there's nothing.
Yeah. I mean, the best example of this, and there are so many, I mean, what you said is just the reality of it. The best example of this was I was sending a freelancer out to Chicago to do a story on Megan Podkowa, who's a terrific player, just completed her career at DePaul. And she was looking for stats on Megan's season and went to the DePaul Athletics website. Mm-hmm. And Megan's stats had last been updated in 2013, in her freshman year. I mean, it's just, and it's very common. And there's two parts to it, and one is it's, you know, the stakeholders themselves not taking it seriously enough. And then the other part of it, which is that there's not a complaint from the media that's not covering them amply to be able to say, hey, you got to get your act together. And the reason why this information is true, and to be clear, there are many SIDs on the women's side who do amazing work giving stats, but the extent to which when it doesn't happen, it continues to be a problem, is when there aren't voices to speak up and say, hey, this needs to change. And what XL is, I believe, a powerful new voice to be able to say, this needs to change, and this matters.
And SID being Sports Information Director?
That's correct. Sorry, yes. First use, I should have spelled that out.
And do you think this is a function of business? Because look at all the money the men's side of sports brings into the schools versus the women's side. So is this a function of...
Sure. Hmm? Oh, sure. But think about how that happens. In other words, you look at how much more and how much more often the men's tournament is promoted than the women's tournament. Look how much bigger of a deal it is for CBS... and across the, you know, CBS, TNT, TBS, et cetera, and across those networks than it is for the women's tournament on ESPN. Think about how much more time and energy goes into that money spent. It takes money to make money. Well, that money is spent to help promote all the stakeholders, the schools, the NCAA, the television rights holders, everything that goes into it. And then you turn around and, oh, wow, there's a bigger audience for it. Well, surprise, surprise. There's nothing inherent in the men's tournament that is going to have a bigger audience than the women's tournament. And a great example of this, and finding out and understanding just how true that is when you look at the Women's World Cup last year and the fact that, all right, Fox Sports, not out of a sense of egalitarianism, not out of a sense of morality or fairness, Fox Sports had to show, hey, we are capable of really promoting and hosting a World Cup. And it just so happened, by accident of fate, their first World Cup was the Women's World Cup. Well, they went out, they put Abby Wambach and Alex Morgan everywhere. They cross-promoted. They were on The Simpsons. They were on American Idol. They did everything possible to promote this tournament. And surprise, surprise, you treat a women's sports tournament like a men's sports tournament, and the audience is huge. And I don't just mean the 26.7 million to watch the World Cup final, which, by the way, is a larger audience than any soccer match, men or women, in the history of the United States on TV. I mean that even the group games that did not involve the U.S. routinely outdrew on a Tuesday afternoon what, say, Major League Soccer gets on a Sunday night on ESPN. And so that's just the reality. You treat men and women the same, and the audience is the same. It's really not that difficult.
I want to turn back to the baseball a little bit here.
Sure.
Taking the Field was published as a traditional print book. Will Pond's Folly was released only as an e-book. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Why did you do it in that manner?
Matter of time. The fact that there was a trial coming up scheduled for March, and the lead time and making sure that everything was accurate and making sure I was able to hunt everything down, there was no way to publish within the framework of a traditional book in time for when the trial would have begun.
Which trial?
And so I wanted this out there. So that would have been the trial between Irvin Picard, trustee for the Bernie Madoff victims, and Fred Wolpon and Saul Katz, the owners of the New York Mets. And I wanted the book to serve as an information piece and as a guidebook to what was going on in the months leading up to it. And so by publishing as an e-book, we were able to come out in December, whereas if we had published as a traditional book, we would have come out in May. Now, unfortunately, the way it all went for the Mets, especially, you know, once there was a settlement that was put forward and accepted by the trustee, once the Mets owners were able to prove, you know, you can't get blood from a stone and we don't have the money to pay you even if you win at trial, was that this dragged out for several years and became a resource for that period of time beyond to get a sense of just why were the New York Mets owners incapable of funding a Major League Baseball team, you know, for half a decade. But at the time, there was a sense that, you know, gee, this could go quickly if, in fact, this goes to trial. Because, again, if there was no settlement, the Mets owners didn't have the money to pay at that time.
Did you get a lot of feedback for taking the field? Because you get a sense of every fan believes he or she can do a better job than the people currently handling the job.
Yeah, I did. It was really gratifying to hear from people about this. You know, to me, when I think back on taking the field, there were sort of two parts to it. And one was the satirical idea of, you know, running for general manager as its political campaign, which I like to feel was inspired by Calvin Trillin and sort of the Eric Stillness that he brought to his work. Not trying to claim to be at the same level as Calvin Trillin, one of my absolute heroes, but certainly that general belief was sort of the framework that I had in my mind with that. But it was also really a time capsule in terms of how you pass on a love of baseball to a child, in this case my first child, Mirabelle. And getting the opportunity to write about that, about nation fatherhood, at the same time as I sort of captured the ideas of the way in which a baseball team operates, which is something that obviously is very significant in my mind. That's really the common theme when you look at Wolpon's Folly, Taking the Field, and the Cardinals' Way, is looking at the way baseball teams operate. Well, that was a fun way to go about doing it, and really had a lot of fun writing that story start to finish.
Now you have two small children.
Yes, that's correct. One not so small anymore.
That's true. And this job at Excel is the first time, I if I'm phrasing this correctly, that you've been able to get out of the house in quite a while because you've been staying home to take care of the kids. How do you find the time to do all this stuff?
I try to do it as efficiently as possible. So I'm trying to make sure that I'm working hard and at the same time trying to do everything. The ability to work from my phone and my iPad is tremendously important, so I'm able to edit in the mornings while I'm giving breakfast to the girls before, you know, I drop them off. I'm really fortunate to have my in-laws some people who are able to take care of my children and do so in a way that doesn't fill me with terror and panic every morning when I drop my younger daughter off, and to have the amazing support of my wife, who, you know, it wasn't even a question when Excel came up, and it was this opportunity, and this has been something that was really meaningful and was a significant, you know, it felt almost like a calling, you know, the opportunity, because you can't unsee it once you see what's being done to and not being done for the world of women's sports. And it wasn't even a question. It was, all right, we're going to sit down and figure out how to get it done, and she and I figured that out together. And so those are really the answers. And not to mention people at Excel being extremely understanding of the balancing act that's taking place as well. And then, quite frankly, a whole lot of work. You know, I'm looking at it last thing before I go to bed. I'm looking at it first thing when I get up. But I feel good about it because I feel like we're doing something that matters.
Now, you mentioned Meryl Beryl. You got to mention your other daughter's name so she can hear it when you're playing this.
Is Juliet the baby? Juliet is 2, Mirabel is 6, and my goodness, I love raising both of them so much.
Who are your literary baseball influences? Because you do write about business a lot, and that's a very specific subgenre in the field. I wonder if you have any specific writers in that area that you admire.
Well, so again, he's not a baseball writer, but Calvin Trillin is someone who made it clear to me, okay, it's okay to go serious about a murder story and at the same time have the same writer be able to write about campaigns to make spaghetti carbonara the National Thanksgiving Day meal, you know? And so that was something really significant to me growing up. Rich Sandemir is someone who I'm honored to call a friend now, and I mean, it's sort of mind-boggling to me because that's a byline that I grew up with in the Times, and someone who covers, again, he can do fun stories. Like, he had this great story about Mr. Met a few years ago and the role Mr. Met played and access to Mr. Met played and the Mets getting minority owners. But at the same time, that was an important story because it captured sort of where the Mets were financially at that time. And so Rich Sandemir is someone who I would certainly cite. And then there's so many great baseball writers that I read. You know, Roger Angel, I wouldn't be nearly bold enough to suggest that he is an influence, but Lord knows I read every last thing I can. I remember growing up reading his collections when I would be, you know, away at summer camp and loving it just as much as I remembered reading Thomas Boswell's collections and how Life Imitates the World Series and how Time Begins on Opening Day. And so, you know, you just read so many people, and that continues to this time. There's so many great beat reporters, you know, whether it's Derek Gould, you know, covering the Cardinals for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, you know, or someone like Trent Rosenkrantz who covers the Cincinnati Reds. And I'll just read everything Trent writes. Or even someone like Jay Jaffe over at SI writing eloquently about everything, and especially the Hall of Fame. And I know this is about my book, but he's got a Hall of Fame book coming out this year, and I sure wouldn't miss it, so I wouldn't miss anything that Jay does. So I'm missing people, and I definitely haven't gotten to everyone, but, you know, there's so much to read, and my goodness, do I love getting to every part of it.
What about you? Are you working on anything, a major book project for the near future?
Not at the moment.
My
ears are... Well, I don't know if I'd call it a break, given how busy Excel is and everything else, and, you know, and 2 little girls, and my wife, who certainly I try to give as much time to as I can for purely selfish reasons. I like her. But, you know, certainly I'm sure the next thing will come up. It's got to be something I want to immerse myself in for a long period of time, the way I did the Cardinals. And I loved every minute of researching and writing that book about the Cardinals. And it's something where, all right, this isn't just a story. This is something that I'm going to turn my life over to for this long period of time. And if I had it to do over again in a perfect world, I wouldn't have done that in conjunction with the first year of Juliet's life, because that's a very hard balance for year one of a baby. But again, that, you know, that even comes back to Rachel, to my wife, who said, you need to write this book, and we're going to figure out how we balance and how we get to do it. And Rachel works too. Rachel is a teacher. I mean, this is not an easy balancing act to do, but that's what allows us to do it. And so when the time comes, and that comes up, I'll know what's right. We'll all know what's right.
And we have been talking with Howard Megdal, author of The Cardinal's Way, as well as a couple of books about the Mets and the hardest working man in sports journalism. Howard, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Ron.
And that was the Bookshelf Conversation with Howard Megdal. Tune in again next time when we'll have another interesting guest from the world of baseball pop culture. And remember to visit Ron Kaplan's baseballbookshelf.com frequently for the latest news, reviews, previews, and interviews with everything that's going on in the baseball literary world. If you have any questions, issues, whatnot, please send me a line at ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf@gmail.com. Thanks again, everybody. Talk to you later.
Seen Matty pitching that fader so grand, he'd have said, "Boys, I'm glad I discovered this land. Gee, it's a wonder."